If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 299. This is our 2024 Valero Texas Open Bets Pod. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have my in-depth Valero betting preview. We've got strokes gained rankings, player form stats, plus, of course, our Valero predictor model. All of that content is available across the event, completely free of charge. There is no paywall. On X, if you wanted to follow us, I am at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available along with my weekly golf betting show. If you are listening on YouTube, please like the show. And you guys as listeners power the podcast, as you know. So we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one is from Josh G. And Josh G is in Colorado, the United States of America. Thank you, Josh G. I'll say that up front. He's actually entitled this five-star review, Thanks. Five stars. Hey, fellas, I like to bet 5 to 10 leg parlays on top 10 to 40 markets. Would you advise against this? I would also enjoy hearing your thoughts on long shots who may place in the top 40 and why. Also, it would be helpful to compare the current tournament or course to what you think is a comparable course, so I can gauge things that way. It would be fantastic if you could add such content. Thank you. That is from Josh G in Colorado, the United States of America. Comparable courses.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Yeah, I guess we touch on a lot of this kind of stuff in a roundabout way, either through the analysis we do before we publish our written previews or just in the thought processes anyway. Comparable courses are, they're subjective, aren't they, to a large degree. But sometimes, I know you pick out quite a few in your justification for players often, Steve, don't you, in terms of how you...
Agronomy, type of course, blah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, exactly. As for rolling up players in top 40 accumulators, you know, a lot of the players that we pick, particularly the long shots, whether they actually end up finishing in that kind of position, it's often outside of the paying each way places. I know that much, but I don't know. It's a similar conversation to trying to pick players for DraftKings that you might think are, you know, particularly good value right down the bottom of the salary scale, but could sneak a reasonable enough finish to score you some points.
It's not for us to advise how you bet, is it? People bet how they want to bet. And if you found a niche, stick with it. I mean, I'm very basic. I just back each way or, you know, win. Okay. And sometimes I'll back some of the stake each way and some of the stake on the exchange. So then you've got some flexibility to trade and do whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you found a niche that you enjoy betting on and you can take people's information and turn that into data that you can put on your bets, go for it.
I think you pick your battles as well, and you know, if you've got yourself a number of players that you think could go well but aren't really likely to feature at the very top end of the market, perhaps that's when you do roll them into an acca of some description with you know, as you say, top 20 or top 40. It's like the it's like the Masters, isn't it, where you can do the to make the cut accumulators, which always seem to be popular because of the nature of the tournament, the nature of the cut rule, and the nature of the players in there. You know, there's a lot of players at the Masters who you'd expect not to make the cut simply because they're either seeing it for the first time or you know, the past champions or whatever the reason is. And it gives you a better steer as to how you may play that particular market.
Could be an interest. That's an interesting kind of bet type to maybe have a little bit more live bets on Sunday. If you have a few different accumulators going, if your guys aren't going to win, but like you could have a few in the mix just to get into the top 40. The only thing you're missing out on is they will not be shown on TV coverage. So your app tracking. That's not my style of betting, but yeah, if it makes it fun for you, then go nuts on it. I think that's probably the best advice we can give, isn't it?
I think
each
so.
Each to their own.
Each their own. That's we've always said that. You know, I would love longer. I would love to be able to take longer to get previews out and content out. The trouble is, as content providers that we all are, you know, getting content out there in a timely manner is very important because otherwise no one's got time to actually listen or watch or read it. So there's only so much you can do in a very limited time. And we like to keep this podcast to around about the hour and five mark. We're waffling this week because Paul hasn't got any tournament to talk about. So we've got a little bit of spare time. Let's talk about last week. I've got to say it was rather depressing from my perspective as I added Scottie Scheffler and Taylor Moore to my rank of second place finishers in 2024. I just want to take you through some interesting stats from last week. In fact, I'll go as far as fascinating stats. I did highlight last week the Memorial Park was a strange setup, as in strange in a when I say strange, that can come across as I don't like the setup. That's not true. But strange as in how balanced that golf course is when you've got a situation where the previous four champions before Stefan Jaeger this year had 52% of their strokes gained had been gained on the tee to green element and 48 on the putting green. I mean, that is not normal. Jaeger's taken that even further. His win last week, he was 47% of his strokes gained from tee to green and 53% on the greens. And in a tournament like that, you can see why Scottie Scheffler was fighting with the likes of Taylor Moore, Alejandro Tosti, Thomas Dietrich and David Skins on a Sunday and not beating them. Because, as we know, and we did say this last week, Scottie's weakness is his putting. And on a course where putting is so, so important, he just couldn't get away from the pack. He couldn't... His tee to green game couldn't get him enough benefit to actually pulling away from the pack. Clearly, if he hadn't three putted from 4 feet on Friday on that would have, you know, at the end of the day, he should have won that tournament with those two doubles. He could have won that by 3 or 4. Interesting. My advice to, and I know that Scottie Scheffler and his team will be regular listeners to the podcast, of course. Scottie, go and play the Valero Texas Open next year. You'll actually win it by 5.
Yeah, bit more up his alley.
Yeah.
Perhaps he just wanted to test himself, Steve. At the end of the day, he had an opportunity right to the very end, didn't he, with that 5-footer at the end. And, you know, you look at the market at that point and he was only marginally behind Jaeger at that point, even though Jaeger was already in the hutch with a shot lead at that point, because the market assumed that he's really quite likely to make it and then, you know, go forward and win the playoff as it would have been, but wasn't to be. But no, unlucky from your side, because you know, you had a couple of players bang in the mix all the way through.
Anyone can pick Scottie Scheffler at 3-1, boring bet, I get that. But both times I've done it, I've actually had another place at player in second. Brian Harman at the Players, and now Taylor Moore at 70-1. So it gets to the point where instead of actually covering your bets, clearly with Scheffler winning and Moore in second and Scheffler winning at the Players and Harman in second, I also had Matsuharman in top eight, you do make a decent profit on the week. And that's the margins in golf betting are so crazily small, it's frightening. And when you look back at your profit loss at the end of the end of the year and you've got 7 second places sitting there, you just think, my God. But you keep going, don't you? You do keep going because there's always another tournament. But actually, I thought it was a decent tournament last week. It was good to see some different names at the top of the leaderboard. Tony Finau came back from the dead, so he's going to be an interesting player to look through in terms of, do we add Tony Finau to our betting portfolios for the Masters next week? This is the Valero Texas Open week. We'll talk Valero Texas Open, but in the grand scheme of the things, everyone that's pretty much listening to this is so excited about the Masters. We just want to get there. We just want to get there, don't we?
Yeah, it won't be long.
I actually just haven't looked. You fill in for me. I just want to look where what's happened to the actual Masters betting market after last week.
Yeah.
Has there been any changes?
I saw Scotty was nibbled into 4-1 best price, which you'd expect. And it looks like, you know, in many places he's going to go off short on that, which it's got to be the shortest favourite for some time at the Masters.
It does throw up a new question for the 2024 Masters, one that we haven't faced for a long time, if at all. You're basically asking yourself the question, instead of will one of the top three win, you're asking yourself, is Scotty Scheffler going to win?
Yeah.
It's quite a simple question this time around.
And you'd expect there to be a without Scheffler market out there as well for punters who want to take Scheffler out of the equation completely.
Yeah.
Which if you've got any fear that he's going to go and win, which you should have because he's got a very good chance of winning, then that could potentially just ease that fear by playing that market instead.
Sorry, Paul.
No, sorry,
that's true, yes. You will get those without markets, yeah.
Yeah, Tuesday maybe.
Jaeger was 30s to 33s and 35s with most bookmakers, but on Monday there was 50-1 about him. And that's where I take my records from with Unibet. Mm. So on that basis, I've added him to the list of players that are over 40-1 and bigger that haven't won any PGA Tour events. I mean, basically, we're still in this situation where only Scotty Scheffler has won at sub 40-1 on the PGA Tour this year.
Yep.
Madness.
Mm.
Just keeps going.
Yep.
Can you think of any reasons, Barry, why this is happening this year? Is it the fact that we've gone to this role, you know, we've gone to a new season starting literally in January and players are, I just can't quite get my head around it. It's just the underdog city. Week in, week out.
I wonder if there's any psychology around the signature events and getting into them, or, you know, trying to seal your place in there. A little bit of the, maybe playing at the latter half of last year is helping you kind of get your, find your gears now. Mm. And then the other end could just be a wild end of the bell curve.
Yeah. I can see that, actually. Because there's so many reasons now for these guys that are just under the top 30 to be playing hot golf, to get into tournaments with big money. Mm. And once you get in those, I mean, if you can grab a top 15 finish, it's just doing so many FedEx Cup points, you're pretty much guaranteeing your card for the whole year. Stefan Jaeger is now up to top 40. I know it's before people start throwing stuff at me, you know, the world rankings don't mean anything, but he's now in the top 43 in the world, Stefan Jaeger. He's definitely jumped a level. We saw that, didn't we, earlier in the year with his third at Mexico. He was the long-time leader, wasn't he, at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. And there's one thing you can say about Jaeger. He's turned himself into an elite driver of the golf ball. And as we know, in modern golf, on lots of PGA Tour courses, that helps you separate yourself. Mm. So, yeah, it wasn't exactly a shock winner when Stefan Jaeger popped up. It's been trending a little bit.
Yeah, it wasn't massively popular, though, was he? You know, the price looked a little skinny, as you say, 50s yeah, in places, but generally quite a bit short on that. Yeah, it wasn't really on my radar for a winner, must say.
Thoughts on the Masters quickly before we head into the Valero Texas Open? Have you placed any bets, gentlemen, since we last convened? Or have you got any thoughts about what you're going to do or anything in general?
This is the week for the analysis, I think. I tend to keep my powder dry until the week of the event because of the nature of the markets, the way that the markets tend to push out certain players, certainly get some extended places, hopefully from Thursday, Friday this week onwards, and then over the weekend. And, in such a short field, a field that's looking like, 87, potentially 88, if a non-winner this week manages to squeeze in, then when you're getting offered 8, 10, potentially 12 places each way on the week of the event, that's so attractive in such a short field. So tend to hold on for that, but yeah, don't know about you, Barry. Similar strategy.
The only bet I have is from last year is Max Homa, and I'm happy to have that at 40-1. Off we go to next week. I was very, very bullish on Rory a few weeks ago, and I don't know so much anymore. Kind of leaning towards a bit of a bet on Scheffler, but I kind of just want to time the bet when he's in running and maybe a couple off the pace, so I might try sneak a little bit more than just the 4-1 that's there.
Oh, that's what winds me up even more about last week. They've shaved him in for the Masters and he didn't win the bloody tournament for me. It's like just a double fingers up job, isn't it? And I know, yeah, he shouldn't be backing short price winners though. But interesting, yeah. It is. It's a fascinating riddle to try and unpick next week. It really is. Don't forget about the stat, listeners. 4 of the last 5 winners of the Masters have been 16-1 or below. Bearing in mind, at the moment, we've only got Scottie Scheffler at 4-1, Rory McIlroy 11-1, and John Rahm pretty much 12-1 everywhere. So it's either one of those three, or as we know, there is this juicy 40-45-1 and upwards price where you do get a lot of Masters winners. But that is cutting out Koepka, Spieth, Xander, Åberg, Hovland, a whole host of players before you get to this 40-1 kind of level. And a lot of those 40-1 guys, you look at them and go, really, is Colin Morikawa going to win the Masters? I don't think so. Sam Burns? No. There is one name that interests me. I hope there's going to be a bad weather forecast, Barry.
I love it. I love that price.
Yeah. We are recording our Masters Research podcast this Thursday. It will be out on Thursday. So, listeners, stay tuned for that. Right, that's enough waffle. Let's talk about the Valero Texas Open, shall we?
I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, majors competition.
Well, there's a few things. I think we should also just touch on Keita Nakajima's win in India last week, because it was...
I do apologise.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's worth touching on because he was seriously impressive. And this is a young guy who's, well, he's now currently in the Olympics playing alongside Hideki as it stands. And, seriously impressive win. Four shots in the end, but he was, 8 clear at one point on Sunday. And, you know, the world is... You know, he's a oyster, effectively. He's opened up for him. He's got big ambitions to make it onto the PGA Tour next year. And who knows? You know, the way he's going, that's well within his sights, I think. Massive amateur career. I don't know if you followed any of the commentary around him, but he's now turned that into four wins on the Japan Tour and a DP World Tour win as well. So, yeah, one to seriously keep an eye on for the future, I think. He's got something about him, this lad.
Up to 78th in the world as a result.
Mm, yeah, one more win and he's going to be knocking on the door to top 50 and opens up plenty of doors for him. He's played a few majors already and not done a great deal, but he's still developing. It's going to do him a world of good, I think.
That course didn't seem as tough as it can be.
There was a lot more birdies about. You've still got these incredibly difficult holes, these kind of divisive holes from a player and a punter's perspective, because like the 14th, you can just have an absolute nightmare there. But yeah, it was certainly a little bit easier in terms of scoring. For him to get to 20 under at one point, I never expected anyone to get that low. I think that's testament to how well he played, how well he putted. He was seriously impressive with the putter. He topped the strokes game putting and the putting average stats for the week. And that's even with his late wobble over the last half dozen holes or so.
Well, and he's 8 shots clear.
Yeah, it doesn't matter a great deal at that point, of course. But
I was beating you last summer by 8 shots, and in the end it was a draw, wasn't it? With about 3 holes left.
Yeah, it's just impressive. I think you just got to take your hat off to him. You know, I had high hopes for Joost Luiten after he started well, but just trod water for 3 days. And Jeff Winthrop, he was making a latest charge, but finished ninth, which is no good to man or beast, really, isn't it? We move on.
Yeah. Paul, we do need to, and Steve, we do need to remember to back Soderberg in his next one or two events. He lost 7 shots in 2 holes in his 71.
Oh, Barry after the event last week came out with, it did make me titter on Thursday. You know, literally players have played 3 holes and Barry comes onto our group. He's going, oh, always back Bo Hosler in Texas in the first round. So is that something you're putting forward as a bet this week, Barry?
Sure, why not? Let's just go for it.
So there you go, listeners. Bo Hosler, first round leader in Texas. Where did he actually finish at the end of the first round? He wasn't first round leader, I know that much.
No, I don't think so. This could also have been, who was it did that there the week before, went out 5 or 6 under for the front nine.
And I said Keith Mitchell, similar. Wouldn't it?
There we go, Mitchell. First nine leader is a market I want to get involved in before they get a chance to realize that they're at the top of the leaderboard, or when they do, when they make the turn, they go and they eject. Mm. So there's the new market, first nine leader.
Stefan Jaeger, I believe, was the only player, even though he won and would have qualified for the Masters anyway, to jump into the top 50 to get into the Masters field. I did go through a long list of players that I didn't fancy last week because they wouldn't do very well with the mental pressure. I don't know if I'm... Jaeger might have been on that list. He was right tentatively at the end of it, I think. But fair play to him. Did deliver.
You also brought Finau back to life. You said he was gone all over the place. So if any listeners out there have a player they want to fire on any given week... We can get Steve to trash them on the podcast for a donation.
Steve to write him off and then jobs are good.
Do you think we might be getting Tony Finau 40-1 for the Masters next week? There's a little bit out there still.
Mm. Yeah, he doesn't mind a top 10, does he?
Because you know what? In a couple of weeks' time, if he won the Masters, we'd all be sitting here going, wasn't it obvious? Wasn't it Tony Finau was so damn obvious? He was in the hunt at Houston and we completely ignored him. Then he won his first major. Weren't we stupid?
I'm putting this note down right now.
Yeah. And then, of course, we'll all put him up. And, of course, he'll finish 33rd at the Masters. Mm. Golf bet. I'm just going to mention, Paul, you can back me up on this one. The Bet365 Majors competition. Mm. Our closing date for that will be the first tee off at the Masters next week. So if you are formulating your four players in a one and done situation for both the Masters, Open, PGA Championship, US Open, that's not in the right order, but you get the gist. I will put a link in the podcast description how you can enter. We've got a healthy amount of entry so far, but of course, the next week, there will be week and a half, there will be a huge rush of entries for that competition. So just a bit of a pointer there to listeners. Don't miss out on the Bet365 sponsored majors competition for 2024. Right, let's finally go into the Valero Texas Open. I do apologise for completely forgetting the DP World Tour poll. It's been a hazardous few days for the presenter. Right.
No worries.
Which isn't ending anytime soon. Right. It's the curtain raiser for the Masters. It used to be, of course, the Houston Open. The last one of those was in 2018, won by Ian Poulter, who was ranked 51st in the world, wasn't in the Masters field. Got to the quarterfinals of the World Match Play and then won this, beating your first round leader punt this week, Barry, Bo Hosler, always back him in Texas, first round leader. He beat him in a playoff. Was it a playoff in the end, I think? I think it was. Or he beat him on the last green for, I can remember Poults going absolutely mental. He was 100-1 that week.
Mm. Made some putts, didn't he, Poulter?
Since 2021, though, this has been the curtain jerker for the Masters. 2021, Jordan Spieth won at 16-1. I was on him that week. He was ranked 53rd in the world. 2022, JJ Spawn won, 242nd in the world. He won at 200-1, surprisingly enough. Last year, Mr. Valero Texas Open himself, Corey Connors, the only course that that guy can win on twice, won this at 20-1. Very unexciting. He was third in the betting market. He was 40th in the world. So 16-1, 200-1 and 20-1. The last three winners the week before the Masters. So that was something that kind of marked my card with my sort of angles this week in terms of selections. The golf course itself, the Oaks course, TPC San Antonio. So we're deep in the Lone Star State for the second week. Don't boo, don't hiss. It's a Greg Norman design. I categorise it as long. 7,438 yards in length. It is a standard par 72 featuring four par fives. Said it last week, say it every week we talk about Texas golf. A lot of it depends on the strength of the wind. And as we saw last week, I mean, that was blowing 25 miles an hour Friday, 27 Saturday and 22 gusts of on Sunday last week in Houston, and 12-1. That's what Texas golf can do to you. It howls, doesn't it? Absolute howling wind.
Yep.
I'm not seeing so much of that this week in the forecast. I think Thursday looks light. Sunday looks light. The wind gets up on Friday. Might touch gusting 20, bearing in mind I'm looking at this weather forecast on Tuesday. And Saturday looks an absolute howler. 30 plus and the temperatures drop by 6 to 7 degrees Celsius to 21 degrees. So it's not exactly cold, but considering the rest of the tournament is high 20s, it's a significant falling in temperature on the Saturday. So it's going to be howling with wind and a bit colder. For those of you in America, that is 70 Fahrenheit on Saturday. The rest of the tournament's going to be played 79 to 81 Fahrenheit. So a 10 degree drop. Love the course. What do we know about it? It's a kind of, I don't classify it as, but it's got a very desert-like feel to it. Cacti, rocks everywhere. If you stray off the beaten track here, you are in serious, serious trouble. Cue reference to Kevin Na. He's the prime example here. So I don't think there's a bad stat in terms of looking at either good drive percentage or proximity to fairway distance. So basically, players that when they miss, don't miss by a mile. So if you know, it would put you off someone like a Ryan Brame character who can miss it 40, 45, 50 feet off the fairway. Well, round here, you're in serious bother. I prefer nuggety sorts. This is the kind of golf course where if you hit the ball straight and short, you will be gaining strokes off the tee. There is an advantage to not spraying the ball off the tee box. The actual rough penalty, so hitting the rough here doesn't actually make much difference. So driving accuracy itself isn't that important before we go down that route. It's just avoiding these huge mistakes off the tee. That's what's going to cause you doubles, trebles and onwards. So those that are pretty straight off the tee or minimise their mistakes off the tee, I think are something to really tap into this week. Other thing I will point out, take the last four winners here and just look at the mix between tee to green and strokes gained putting in terms of total strokes gained. 82% tee to green. See what I'm saying about the difference between this week and last week? 82% tee to green, only 18% strokes gained putting. And I know that's really, really obvious because Corey Connors has won two of the last four here. You know, team no putt is undoubtedly in effect this week. I think Connors won here, literally gaining like 0.01 of a stroke putting last year. But clearly his tee to green game was absolutely immaculate. I think he gained like 3.5 strokes a day, tee to green. Mm. In terms of agronomy, it's Barry's favourite yet again. We've got the overseed, Barry. We have the Poa Trivialis overseed. But they are champion Bermuda grass rather than Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass, which we've seen so much of this year.
The one I liked this week, Steve, was Chewing's Fescue.
Chewing Fescue, yeah.
Little Google on this, yeah. It allows it to get, they use it on bowling greens, just learned, and allows it to get it nice and tight. Little fine bladed grass.
There you go.
You just don't get this on any other golf betting podcast. It's fact. Who else is going to be mentioning Chewing Fescue and the fact that they use it on bowling greens?
Fact of the day.
That's why thousands come back every week and listen to this, Jabs. Fact.
Certainly not for our bets.
Oh, God. If you want a second place, this is the place. Right, I'm going to highlight William Hill this week, who, for me, had some half-decent prices, and they still have. They're 8 places each way, 50 odds, as they are pretty much every week on the full-field PGA Tour events. I'm seeing them right now as we're recording this Tuesday morning. They are best extended market odds price on Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama, Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa. Decent field this week. Corey Connors, Max Homer, Mats Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood. The list goes on and on. If you are 18 plus and do not have a William Hill account, you can find details of their bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. I found it fairly easy at the top of the market this week, I have to say. And the reason I say that is, I still think, and just reading through previous winners the week before the Masters, Martin Laird, Matt Jones, JB Holmes, you know, it's not screaming elite golfers yet. Jim Herman, the Hermanator, Paul.
Hang on a second. They're all slightly ginger.
That could be an angle.
This week. I'm backing Seamus Power. That's it. I needed one final thing to convince me. I'm in.
He's on my post-it note of doom, but Russell Henley won the week before the Masters in 2017. It's not screaming to me, players of the ilk of Colin Morikawa, Max Homer. Almost said Corey Connors. So I just looked at the top of the board and I thought, who turning up here is the kind of player who is going to actually give a damn about winning the Valero Texas Open this week? I came up with three names at the top of the leaderboard, at the top of the betting, sorry. Three players I think will or potentially would give a damn about winning. Right, first one, Rory McIlroy. We've seen Rory beat up RBC Canadian Open fields the week before the US Open on a regular basis. With Rory, you just don't know what you're going to get. He could be leading this by five shots come Friday afternoon, or he could be struggling in 42nd place. He doesn't know, I don't think. Do not be surprised to see Rory McIlroy get an absolute flyer and be near the top of the leaderboard. I then thought, who else? And at that stage, I severely started to struggle because I think a lot of these players are simply here for a tune-up or their games aren't good enough currently to win on the PGA Tour. So they're literally trying to find something to fire them towards Augusta. Now, I would throw into that category Colin Morikawa, who you look at his game at the moment and his fundamental basics, he's nowhere near where he usually is. And that's the only reason he's probably playing this. And of course, there is a gap in the schedule because there was no world match play this year. So you've got players here wanting to play competitively, clearly walking or turning up Augusta next Monday morning. The only other player I could find at the very, very top of the betting market that I thought, I think he's going to turn up and I think he's not going to give a damn about the Masters next week, is Ludvig Åberg. And when you start scratching the surface with Åberg, he does make a lot of sense. Firstly, he has never gone to a major championship as a professional golfer. Next week is the first time ever. Has no idea what to expect. Secondly, Ludvig went to Texas Tech University, and a lot of his amateur golf was in the Lone Star State. So he'll have a big friends network there. Clearly likes playing in Texas. Won a couple of big amateur tournaments in Texas. One at El Paso, I can remember. And he also won the Big 12 Conference individual. That was also played in Texas. So gets on with this kind of course, this kind of location in terms of the agronomy, just in terms of how Texas courses tend to set up. And I just thought, do you know, with Ludvig, the thing is, clearly he has won on the PGA Tour, but he won it at the arse end of 2023 when basically no one in the States is watching golf apart from the absolute hardcore and gamblers. You just think, actually, him turning up and winning this week in a state that he probably could call his second home in the States, although he does live in Florida now. Lots and lots of positive notes with Ludvig Åberg this week. And I just think he's going to love the course because not only does Ludvig bang the ball a long way, but he bangs it straight as well. And actually, you look at that distance from edge of fairway, he's in the top third on the PGA Tour with his prowess with the driver. So when he does miss, he doesn't miss by a great deal either. So he was the one for me. I managed to squeak 14 to 1, 3 points each way, on Ludvig Åberg for the Valero Texas Open. Do you, and before, I mean, shoot me down in flames, I'm used to it, but That, to me, made logical sense. The other player that I really like the look of in the betting market and just statistically and just knowing him was Hideki Matsuyama. Now, with Hideki, we have seen him win the week before a major. He won that, the WGC Bridgestone Invitational, but that was a World Golf Championship. He also won his first PGA Tour victory way, way, way back at the Memorial Tournament, and that was 2 weeks before the US Open. And I eventually came to the conclusion, I don't see Hideki Matsuyama ruining his chances of winning the Masters, bearing in mind that the last person to win the week before the Masters and go on to win the Masters was Phil Mickelson. And I think, don't shoot me down in flames, I'm trying to remember the year, Paul. I think it was 02 or 03 or something like that.
Was it the Bell South Classic or something like that?
Yeah, Bell South Classic. So you think, is Hideki really going to put his foot down and win the Valero Texas Open? Or is he going to say, do you know what? I'm going to do what I've done here the last few years and finish kind of 18th,
yeah,
20th. And a couple of rounds, I'm really going to put the foot down and see what I've got in the tank. And I went down that option. Mm. I wouldn't put anyone off Matsuyama. His stats are perfect for this. But I just don't think, when push comes to shove, he's going to be interested about winning the Valero Texas Open, when I think he's got a bloody good shout of winning the Masters, a second green jacket next week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same argument with Rory and Spieth, isn't it? The guys who, you know, have got some history, or, you know, think they could go well next week. And will we be wanting to peak for that rather than peak a week early? And, as you say, not necessarily taking themselves out of the equation completely, but the history's against them. And, you know, the winner of the Masters generally is the player that manages to peak best for that particular week. So, yeah, that's the logic of Åberg.
I took Åberg with William Hill. When Jordan Spieth didn't win here, and we were on him at 16-1, so that 14-1 price on Åberg, there was a sneaky bit of 16s out there with Unibet as well. So I will probably price him up on my list if he was to win as a 16-1 chance. But Spieth hadn't won on the PGA Tour for a good couple of years before he won that Valero Texas Open a few years ago. He was absolutely desperate for any kind of win. Mm-hmm. And he does like, Spieth will go in, he's very Phil Mickelson. He wants to go in with momentum. So I wouldn't be surprised if Spieth does go well this week. That doesn't mean I think he's going to win, though, because I don't. So that's why I went for Åberg. On that basis. Next up for me is Billy Horschel at 35-1. Where are you guys chiming in this week, chaps, in terms of prices?
I've got a couple over 50s and a couple three figures for me, so nothing below that.
Nice, Paul. We switched seats this week. I'm thinking, look at a Bezuidenhout.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse the pronunciation, the Bamford pronunciation skills this morning. He's been popping his head up around leaderboards the last few weeks. Really good on approach. So just, he's not the most accurate or the longest driver, but of course it's only 7,400 yards. I disagree with you, Steve. If being a par 72, I wouldn't classify this as a long course. It could play out that way. But, yeah, he's 10th in your rolling strokes gain total, just to use your stats against you for not picking him. Actually, 9th, once you've edited a player who's not playing this weekend. just to completely torch you.
Once I take out a player that's not even in the field this week, he'll be 9th, yeah. As I said, it's been a long week.
If you remove Hideki and Rory from the strokes gain from that, then he's up to 7th, because you don't want, neither of them really wants to win this week.
Mm.
I apologise up front, but I put Billy Horschel up as well. I know where this goes. I know where this leads to. I'll state the case. Four of Billy's seven PGA Tour titles have been on Bermuda grass greens. Two of them have been on these Bermuda Poetrivialist overseas greens. Louisiana, Austin Country Club, when he won the World Match Play. So, the Texas winner. I'd always think with Billy, he seems to get himself in some serious messes, doesn't he? He just plays, he always quotes Todd Anderson and he's all, oh, we're working on this and we're tinkering with that and all of a sudden you get a slump from him. But one thing you do get with Billy, and you've seen this across his career, when he finds something, he can produce results quickly of a very high level and over a period of time in consecutive tournaments. And I did notice the end of last week, all of a sudden, he had a round on Sunday, which was absolutely fabulous. And when he was talking after Sunday, he said, I haven't hit the ball so well for a long period of time. He was 12th for off the tee, He was 12th for approach, 8th for around the green. He was 4th for tee to green. He gained over 3.3 strokes and he was 14th for putting. Now, putting on Bermuda has never been Billy's problem. What's been his problem recently has been the approach play. And all I thought was, the only way that Billy Horschel gets into the Masters this year is to win this tournament. And he's just that kind of sparky soul. And we've seen this, we see this year in Matt Kuchar the last couple of years. It's someone, the story comes out during the coverage, oh, you know, Matt Kuchar hasn't been, he hasn't missed an Augusta since da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you see them at the top of the leaderboard and they are trying their absolute guts out to get that win to get to Augusta next week. I just thought Billy Horschel could be that man. If he does, and it's a big if he does continue that tee to green game that we saw on the Sunday at Houston, he's going to be a big danger this week because I do like shorter, straighter, nuggety kinds for this golf course. And I don't think Zadenhuis, he kind of fits into that characteristic for me. Not a bomber. Makes a lot of his gains with the approach play, clearly, around the green and with some decent putting on occasions. I think Billy Horschel's in this kind of JJ Spawn type of winner. Even Corey Connors to a certain extent. I mean, he's not long, is he, Corey? But he's damn straight and his approach play is super, super elite. It's these nuggety sorts that I was looking for this week. So yeah, I put Billy Horschel in. 35-1 I got with Betfred, 8 places each way on Billy Ho. Right, Paul, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, I've got, let's say, a couple mid-range 50-1 and above. First one's Akshay Bhatia. Actually got him at 66s yesterday, early doors. 55-1 still out there now. 50s if you want the extended each-way places. Some signs of life with Bhatia. He's another one who needs to win to get into the Masters next week. Three missed cuts at Phoenix, PGA National, Sawgrass, and then improved quite dramatically, 17th at the Valspar, and that was after a pretty slow start. And then 11th last week in Houston, four rounds in the 60s there as well. That's, to me, that's not dissimilar form to how he ended up winning the Barracuda last year. He had some kind of indifferent results, then 35th, 9th, then 1. And that feels kind of similar in terms of him heading towards a peak right now. Second for driving accuracy last week, I like that. 9th for greens and regulation. For old numbers, second for strokes gained approach, 8th for strokes gained tee to green in Houston. So some nice long game stats coming out of his performance last week. Played here once before. He's 46th on debut. Three kind of indifferent rounds and then closed with a 68. So got his head around the course eventually. And I think he could go well this week. I think he's a good each way shout, Bhatia. At 50-1 or slightly above if you want the less places. The other one I backed, Lucas Glover, 80-1, back in on the Glover. And for me, if Corey Connors can win this event twice, then why can't another in Team No Putt, like Lucas Glover, go out and win this? 11th last time out, he was 10th for strokes gained tee to green. He was positive strokes gained putting on his last performance. That was his best putting statistic week of 2024, which won't surprise you if he was positive in terms of strokes gained putting. And as you said, Connors last time, he was only marginally positive with the putter. And I think Glover can do exactly the same thing. Get round the course from tee to green. And if he can just produce that marginally positive strokes gained putting week, which he did last time, then he could go well here. Fourth in 2021. He was fifth to halfway the following year. I think the course suits him nicely. And I think he's another one who could push towards an each-way place or better this week, Glover. So Glover and Bhatia, a couple of 100-to-1 shots or above after that for me.
Glover, if you take out a guy in the field that isn't even in the field from my numbers, he would be tied third for strokes gained tee to green over the last 8 weeks. Yeah. Tied with Ludvig Åberg.
Yep. That's his game. It's just that putter, isn't it? But
now,
see a little bit of a spark, then...
Yeah. I know for a fact, Paul, that Lucas Glover is going to be popping on models. Because he's the perfect sort. Nuggety. I would put Lucas in that category. Mm. We're completely ignoring, actually, the request that we got at the top of the show. Yeah, we're completely ignoring the requests from Josh G in terms of comparable courses. Now, I've got to be frank, I've got no comparable courses, so I know that's useful. I can tell you, though, where players that win this tend to play well. So, Sony Open is in a bad spot. Harbour Town, that's another good spot. Colonial Country Club, that makes a lot of sense because that's in Dallas, Texas. I'm also seeing some weird ones. Just stick with me. Liberty National, the golf course opposite Manhattan. They play in New Jersey. Shout out to Nagels. And also Narashino, where they play in Japan. Players that have done or won this have done well collectively across those golf courses. I'm not saying they're comparable golf courses because they're not, but you know, if you were looking for courses that where people play well and win here, they are those. Bay Hill, another one. Connors has finished third at Bay Hill. Jordan Spieth's got a couple of fourth places. JJ Spawn's never done anything there, but you get the drift. I hope that helps Josh G. Barry, have you got any more to chip in? My next one's 90-1. So if you're in that spot, do not hesitate to come in.
Well, like I said, actually, I'm going to back Seamus Power. No joke. You said the nugget as well. Steve Davis was a nugget, another ginger. So, I mean, all of these factors are just pointing towards...
It does make logical sense, for certain.
I know. I mean, I don't need any more rationale to back him than that. Like, the ginger link is clearly the one this week, the key stat to be on top of. I need to just check the field for who else might be a ginger and back them also.
Power's numbers are just improving week in, week out. So, yeah, I get it.
If you go on to his stats, they just don't look good at the moment. But he started from a very low base.
Yeah, exactly right.
He's picking up. He had a poor final round at Copperhead. Shot 5 over 76. If he shot level par that to finish 26th, if he shot level par in the final round, he would have been T5. So there's good stuff in there, and that was on a, you know, testing golf course, so I like it. 120, I can see him at 125-1, 8 places.
Yeah. Plus, he's. I know that some of the events he's in have featured no cuts, but he's written. You know, he's had checks given to him in his last 6 events, so he's definitely on the upward curve. Seamus Power. And we've always said with him, and you do follow him, Seamus isn't the sort that wins from nowhere. Seamus is always he's a Matt Kuchar sort who it's just literally like a line on a graph, and it's constantly improving and improving and improving and improving. So first, you know, 54 hole leader or in the last group last time out, I could see him being in the mix again this week and actually holding on and being a factor coming down the stretch. Yeah. He's ginger, is he?
Sure, yeah, he's Irish. We're all ginger.
I don't really want to know, to be honest. I'm not gonna go down that route of inquiry. I've put up Davis Riley at 90-1 with Betfred, 8 places each way there. I think it's pick your place market. Davis Riley is, you know, I always talk about Maverick McNealy, and Maverick McNealy only does well on very short golf courses. And whenever I put him up, or I see people put him up on like 7,600 yard courses, McNealy doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Well, Davis Riley is a similar sort of player, as in he's so specialised it's untrue. He has to play on Bermuda grass and he has to play in the southern United States to do well, in essence. I know he had a very good outing, and I was on him that week in Mexico as well. But I mean, Mexico's. Take him to the West Coast, play him on Poana. Take him to the Northeast, play him on bent grass. Just doesn't feature. Take him to Texas, Florida, Oklahoma, Louisiana, these southern states. And it makes sense because he lives in Mississippi, grew up in Mississippi, and went to Alabama University. And his numbers last week were really good. 14th in Houston was his best solo result on the PGA Tour for over a year, when he finished top 9, I think it was, at the 2023 Arnold Palmer. Good tournament, big strength. He was 21st last week for off the tee, 6th for approach, and 5th for tee to green. And as I'm sure you're going to hear on lots of podcasts, he's actually won on this course. He won the Corn Ferry Tour event they played here, the TPC San Antonio Championship at the Oaks. He shot 16 under that week. Do you know what? That 16 under total, I think, is pretty much where they're going to be at the end of this week as well. A good mid-score, 16 under. Not technical like last week, when literally if you were 9, 10 under, you were getting each way place. I think you're going to have to go a bit deeper this week. So Davis Riley for me, 90-1 with Betfred. Right, let's have your longer shots because I've got one more of those as well. So, Paul, throw in your longer shots for us.
I've got two. My last one's shared with you, so I'll let you take the floor with that one. The other one I've backed is KH Lee, who's twice a winner in Texas. He won the Byron Nelson twice, as we know, and I'm sure we'll mention again when it comes around to the Byron Nelson. 31st last week. That was solid, but before that, 9th at the Valspar, 4th at the Cognizant Classic, 2nd for strokes gained off the tee at the Valspar as well. That's really encouraging for this, in my view. Decent approach numbers and tee to green numbers at PGA National, so his long game seems to be working quite nicely. 14th here when he played it on debut. He was 2nd to halfway, 4th into Sunday, so has some reasonable enough course form. Twice a PGA Tour winner since making that debut here. Different player now. Can do anything, KH Lee, so it could be a miscut or he could seriously contend. 100-1, quite happy to take the chance that he will be in the contention bracket this week rather than the miscut bracket. But we shall see. The other one, as I say, is my shared with you, so I'll let you take the floor with that one.
Barry, your longer shot?
Is 125-1 on par not long enough? There was actually, I've kind of skipped over. I was thinking about Eric Van Rooyen. Not sure. To be determined.
Yeah, I put him up here a couple of years ago, and I'm pretty certain he's got links to here. College links, something like that. My only trouble with Eric is he can spray it. You know, I could imagine seeing Eric standing there behind a big cactus. and the caddy's going, I can get it out. And he's like, no, you don't. No. I can see Eric being in that situation. So I did have a good look at Eric, and I came to the conclusion, sprays it too much.
Don't fancy your Tosti then, Barry, after last week?
No, but entertaining.
That golf course. 25-1. That golf course is just so crazy, isn't it? It's all about how far can you hit it? There was no rough there last week, was there? How far can you hit it and a hot putter? That is Memorial Park. And Toasty was right up there. Because that guy can give it a lash, can't he?
Yep. Had a great chance at the end, didn't he?
Paul and I are sharing. This was I actually wrote this tip, the very first tip of the lot, which means he was my most confident tip to a certain extent. I actually wrote this tip on Sunday. He hadn't even finished the final round at the Houston Open. Ryan Moore. Short off the tee, straight as a die, cannot putt, but approach game, around the green game, and the fact that he's playing some really nice stuff at the moment, I think Ryan Moore's a great shout. And his form on this course is 8th, 18th, 7th and 3rd. That 3rd came in 2019. It's hard to say Ryan Moore has had a renaissance, but he is playing the best golf he has for a long time right now. And clearly, Paul, you think exactly the same.
Yeah, it just fits the bill here, I think, for a three-figure shot this week. There's an awful lot to like. That performance at the Valspar, 5th, 2nd for strokes gained approach, 1st for strokes gained tee to green. If that's not a big tick ahead of this week, then I don't know what is really. So, as you say, 31st last week, but this suit's so much better. I'm with you. I see no reason not to take an each-way punt on that. And if you're talking, going back to Josh's point right at the start, top 40, adding him into a top 40 acca this week, he'd be probably the cornerstone of that particular bet, should I be placing that this week.
Yeah. I don't know about his DK ownership, because he has come from... This is exactly what Barry's saying about Seamus Power. The thing with Ryan Moore is, when you're running your models and they're taking last 24 rounds, 40, you know, all this, Ryan Moore won't show, because he's gone through the depths of despair. And I don't think he made a cut on the West Coast. But since he's come east, his game's completely different. And we just said, Alejandro Toasty, Stefan Jaeger, hit the ball as far as humanly possible and putt well was what exactly you needed to be competitive at Memorial Park last week. Bearing in mind, the best player in the world right now couldn't win that tournament with his standard tee to green game, which is elite. Well, in fact, it's kind of double elite. For Ryan Moore to finish 31st there at that course, which was the complete antipathy of a Ryan Moore golf course, shows to me that he's in great nick.
Yep.
So yeah, Ryan Moore. Very excited about Ryan Moore. So my 4 to conclude, Ryan Moore at 110-1. I know I could see some people grabbed early 200-1s over in the States on Ryan Moore, which was... clearly win-only bets, but wow, that's a price. 90-1 on Davis Riley, 35-1 on Billy Horschel, and 14-1 on Ludwig Ober. Paul, can you summarise yours, please?
Yeah, Ryan Moore, KH Lee, Lucas Glover, and Akshay Bhatia for me.
Barry?
Bezuidenhout, Van Rooyen, and Seamus Power.
So you are going for EVR, yes?
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I love Ryan Moore. I'll just support him. I don't want to ruin your bet, so I'll just take 10% of your profits on that when he wins.
done.
And you're going to go Bo Ho's the first round lead, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah.
What did you say? He's so sparky when he gets to always remember first round leader Bo Hosler when he plays in Texas. That,
I think it took about 4 minutes for him to make a bogey after I said that.
Yes, yeah.
By the way, you can grab 66-1 right now on first round leader Bo Hosler. I think that's it, us chaps. We will be back on Thursday to record our 300th episode, the Masters 2024 in-depth research podcast, which I'm immensely looking forward to.
Should be good.
Should be great. I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Best of luck, boys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck to listeners, and we will see you again later this week. See you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf